It is the last day of the month. I think everybody has moved on to a kind of a summer mindset here with the long weekend and with Memorial Day behind us. But it is the 31st of the month, as we do on the last workday of every month. We look back on some of Michigan's biggest news stories. And for that help here today, we welcome the Detroit News, Jonathan Osteen. Good to see you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
And of the BallingerReport.com, Bill Ballinger in Studio S. Good to see you, sir.
Good morning.
For weeks, we've heard about competing plans, one in the State House, one in the Senate, for bailing out and then relaunching the Detroit Public Schools. The reporting seems to suggest that a plan could be voted on very soon. What kind of plan or plans have emerged that will likely be voted on? Bill?
Well, the Senate plan basically has more money in it, startup money for the Detroit School District, some $200 million, than the House plan, which has something like $33 million, I think, in it.
This is to launch the new district.
To launch the new district. Both seemingly agree at this point on this figure of about $500 million and change overall over 10 years that Governor Snyder recommended. And the Detroit Education Commission, which would be created by the Senate version of the plan, has run into a lot of resistance from the House. The House passed a plan without it. It's back being negotiated on by House and Senate members. Mainly, it's up to the Senate right now to decide whether it accepts the House plan, and obviously I don't think it will. Question is there going to be a compromise? What's going to be the nature of the compromise? And that's where we are right now.
And as of last week, it sounded like both the legislative leaders, the Senate Majority Leader Alan Meekoff, House Speaker Kevin Cotter, were willing to compromise on those things, which is itself sort of a breakthrough here. Speaker Cotter has been adamant that he doesn't want the Detroit Education Commission to be part of this deal. Meekoff said he wasn't going to let one issue get in the way of a deal. Then Cotter also went back and said, well, you know, maybe you could call something a Detroit Education Commission, but change the way it works because he doesn't like how it functioned in that Senate.
Yeah, let me just mention the House is really fearful that it gives too much power, this commission, to the mayor, Mike Duggan, to potentially close down charter schools in Detroit or some charter schools that he may not like. So that's the House fear right there. Secondly, let me just point out one other overarching political aspect of this. All the House members this year, 110, they're running for election or re-election, okay? Guess what? The Senate is not running for election this year. And in fact, most of them will never run for the Senate again because they're term limited. And the governor is not running. So politically, the people who have most at stake are in the House. Mm-hmm. And most of these people don't live in Detroit, in case you haven't noticed. Mm-hmm. They're outstate and their districts and the people who live in them are not wildly enthusiastic about what they perceive as another bailout for Detroit.
We'll also point out that as we speak here, just after 9 a.m. Eastern time, that Mayor Mike Duggan has convened a meeting in Detroit and is either meeting now or will be meeting shortly with a number of Detroit charter school operators, I think, according to the reports, to try to get more support from the charter operators themselves for a Detroit Education Commission.
Sure. The charter lobby in Lansing seems to be very uniformly against this, but Duggan is trying to appeal to some of the actual school operators and say, listen, the worst case scenarios you've heard are not true. If this is a mayoral appointed committee, I'm not going to be aggressively shutting down charters. Duggan says he supports school choice, but he thinks bad schools of any kind, whether that's mm-hmm. a charter, traditional public, should be shut down. And he also wants to be able to have some control over where these schools locate, so you don't have a charter opening up directly across the street from a public school in a neighborhood that is already well served, and then you have an education oasis in another spot where there is no school.
And that is part of the educational landscape in the city of Detroit right now.
Right.
It's very chaotic in terms of what schools open where, et cetera, et cetera.
And there's a big interplay between charters. Charters now educate as many, maybe even more students than the traditional Detroit public schools do. So there is some speculation. Can both survive? If charters continue to grow, will that continue to hurt the population, student population of DPS, which of course districts rely on per pupil funding for the state to operate? So that's, you know, that's a, it is a interesting dynamic, and both sides are very interested in how that dynamic plays out.
Tens of thousands of Detroit school kids do attend charter schools in the city. How quickly could some kind of measure emerge here, Bill?
With the legislature,
is this going to drag out for? Is this going to? Well, this has been on the table for a while. Could this drag on quite a bit longer, or do you think you expect something this week?
Well, I think it could happen this week, but probably not. But I think by the time they adjourn this summer, I think maybe something will happen. With the legislature, as Jonathan knows, you never can tell. Something can drag on for weeks, and you think, aren't they ever going to get this done? And then all of a sudden, in a blitzkrieg overnight, something happens and comes together, and they can take a quick vote. So there, we just never
there
know.
There is some incentive for the legislature to act this month, certainly. The school's financial year ends at the end of this month, and once that happens, that's when the district could actually start to go insolvent. Creditors
well,
could start...
the end of this month. You mean June, don't you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Excuse
Today
me.
Today is May. It's yeah. still May.
I jumped ahead, like you said earlier, Mark.
Hours
yeah,
away.
At the end
Hours
of June.
Away.
So
yeah.
If a deal's going to happen, it'll be next. It'll be in June. Otherwise, this worst-case scenario of bankruptcy could happen. Of course, the whole talk about a bailout is to help DPS with their debt. If they don't resolve that issue, creditors could start demanding the district pay. They could take them to bankruptcy court. And because the state guarantees a lot of the loans and a lot of the district debt, taxpayers might be end up on the hook for a bigger bill.
Jonathan Osting of the Detroit News, Bill Ballinger of the BallingerReport.com here joining me on May's Month in Review on WKAR's Current State. We learned last week that the state is taking in less revenue than previously forecast, and I've heard a number of figures in circulation. How much less does Michigan have than originally projected?
Well, they're projecting maybe $460 million less over two fiscal years, or let's put it this way, the part of this fiscal year we're in and the next full one. So it's not quite as dire as it sounds when you say $460 million like this current year or anything like that. And secondly, you stated it right. It's less than projected, meaning they're not getting as much revenue as they thought they would, but they thought they'd be getting a lot more revenue than a year ago. And they're now revising that, saying we're not getting the money coming in as fast as we thought we would. So we're going to have to revise it down. But frankly, there hasn't been a lot of furor about this. Even the Democrats have been pretty mild. They've been critical and say, yes, again, Rick Snyder never should have cut, corporate business taxes the way he did in 2011. We wouldn't be in this pickle. That's another story. We could debate that if you want to. But the point is, nobody's really in an uproar, and they think that they can whittle away at the budget, projected budget shortfall that they're having because of these revenue estimates without doing major damage.
Sure. Without major damage, but we're still talking about cutting, aren't we, Jonathan?
Yeah, well, as Bill stated, we're cutting from an increase. So, for instance, higher education funding, important here in Michigan State. The governor had proposed increasing higher ed funding to $60 million, which would have actually restored 2011 university operation funding levels. Remember, the governor made a big cut his first year in office. So he wanted to get universities all the way back to that point. Instead, they're going to approve a $40 million increase for university operations. So there's more money for universities, but still not
as
much
as
they wanted, okay. And still less in this case than in 2011.
Remind us, there was a big infrastructure piece, well, $165 million in infrastructure spending in the governor's budget. Will that be cut, and will help for Flint become a part of this landscape?
Well, that's another... Those are other questions that are going to have to be resolved, and they could be impacted slightly, yes.
The Flint-specific funding looks to be safe. But what you're talking about, the infrastructure fund, this was going to be a statewide infrastructure fund for the governor to say, hey, not just Flint has these aging pipes. There are other cities around the state that probably would do well to start addressing these issues well, and maybe the state could help kick in there. That is going to be scaled back, according to the budget leaders, from $165 million, which itself, the governor said, was just going to be seed money for a larger effort. It's going to be scaled back next year to $5 million. So probably not a lot is actually going to be able to happen out of that fund next year.
Why, kind of an accounting question here, or an economics question, why is less coming in than anticipated?
Well, a couple reasons. A big reason is business taxes. The state, as Bill mentioned, the governor and legislature did change tax policy in 2012, major tax code rewrite. But part of this issue is we still have these lingering tax credits that were mostly issued under the Granholm era. Those continue to be refunded at a very high rate. And then this year, you also had the new corporate income tax, which is proving to be volatile, was down lower than expected. The combination of those two principal business taxes means the state's actually projected to lose money on the corporate income tax and the Michigan business tax combined next year, about $99 million. So it's sort of two policies from the Granholm and Snyder conflicting with each other and looking pretty messy right now.
Either conflicting or teaming up to wreak havoc with the state budget.
When is the budget expected to arrive on the governor's desk? Is that unpredictable?
They want it done by the 4th of July, certainly, don't they?
Well, yeah, again, they're breaking for summer break. This plan is still to break by the middle towards late June. So they're hoping to still get this done in the next few weeks.
Jonathan Osting of the Detroit News, Bill Ballinger of the BallingerReport.com here on WKAR's Current State and our May month in review. Last week, law enforcement officials on both the state and federal levels requested an end to the Snyder administration's internal inquiry into the state's handling of the Flint water crisis. The administration complied. Why the request to end the investigation, Bill?
They thought it was interfering with what they were trying to do, they being the Attorney General and David Layton, the Genesee County prosecutor, and the federal government. They just felt, look, we're looking at this and we're running into either resistance or conflict from the Snyder administration doing their own internal review. And I must say, frankly, if you're going to have a credible review of what the Snyder administration did or did not do with respect to the Flint water crisis, it shouldn't be being done by the Snyder administration. It's the old fox watching the chicken coop metaphor. Mm-hmm. And the public wants to see a relatively independent outside entity. Now, you could argue that Bill Schuette is a Republican attorney general, so maybe he's not too objective either. But you've got David Layton, a Democrat in Genesee County. You've got the federal government. And everybody thinks these people are trying to do the right thing and get at answers objectively. And if they see that they're having problems for any reason, whatever it might be, get the Snyder administration out of it. And frankly, I think the Snyder administration would be well advised to get out of it.
For the record, here is Attorney General Bill Schuette last Thursday.
It became increasingly clear that we needed to make sure that nothing would impede the criminal investigation to make sure that we provide justice to families of Flint.
Did the governor comply reluctantly, Jonathan? I mean, are there reasons that he would have preferred to continue?
I don't know. I mean, he was quick to comply with the order, from Bill Schuette and from U.S. Attorney General's office. They sent him a letter, I think it was the same day or the next day, that they did, in fact, request the Auditor General to end their investigation. And the MSP one, I believe, had already wrapped up. So they certainly moved quickly to comply. I think it looked bad for the administration. I think what it showed is probably there was a communication breakdown. I mean, the Attorney General's office said they weren't even originally aware that the Michigan State Police had investigated the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. It sounds like two of the state's top-ranking officials probably could have at least sent an email to each other to let each other know what was going on here.
Let's talk a little politics here. A few weeks ago, Democrat Melissa Gilbert dropped out of the race for Congress in our district here in East Lansing, the 8th, citing health reasons. Bill, can you walk us through the Democrats' options here regarding a name on the ballot come November?
Well, first of all, they've got to decide categorically, can they get Melissa Gilbert's name off the ballot? I mean, that is the
big problem.
I've heard
they can't.
Yeah, well, that's...
Her name will be on the
ballot.
That
is a problem. She is citing physically unable to perform and some special reason why her name should be removed from the ballot, at least after the August primary. Whether that's going to fly or not remains to be seen. We're in uncharted territory here. There really has not been a case like this ever, probably, at least in the last half century, precisely like this. So that's, the first question. And the second question is whether her name remains on the ballot or not. Will the Democrats try to come up with another nominee who would also be on the ballot in some way, shape, or form? You can debate that eternally. Frankly, the Democrats may not want to admit this, but this is not a Democratic district. I know Lansing and Ingham County seems to think it is or should be or could be, but it's not. And I think Melissa Gilbert had an uphill struggle anyway, and she'd run a terrible campaign from the very beginning for this office. It's probably just as well she got out of the race. The problem is she got out too late. If she was going to be that bad, she should have quit for whatever reason, health or otherwise, long before she did, and they would have had a chance to come up with somebody who was more credible.
Sure. The big question now is if Melissa Gilbert did get her name pulled from the ballot, is a top-tier Democratic candidate going to want to enter this race this late in the game? Seems unlikely. The Dems say this is still a priority district for them, but obviously Republicans have been laying the groundwork for a healthy campaign for a while now and are going to have a big head start.
Well, Democratic State Chief Brandon Dillon told Michigan's Big Show last week that he brought up Donald Trump and maintained that Donald Trump is going to, quote, going to be an incredible drag on the Republican ticket, and that from Brandon Dillon's point of view, that makes Bishop more vulnerable than he otherwise would be. Interestingly, we've seen Donald Trump's numbers go up noticeably just in recent days.
Remember, Brandon Dillon is chairman of the Michigan Democratic Party. That's what he says. That's what he does for a living. Secondly, Hillary Clinton's numbers are not too far away from Donald Trump's. So before you start dismissing every Republican on the ballot because he's on the same ticket with Donald Trump, maybe you better start worrying about whether Hillary Clinton is going to be that much of a help, if not a hindrance, to Democratic candidates.
Are you off to Mackinac Island, Jonathan?
Maybe, probably. Still not sure. The legislature is very up in the air this week in terms of what they're going to do. So if they do something big like DPS, I'll be here.
Bill, what about
you? I will not be up there. And apparently, maybe, as Jonathan said, maybe the legislature won't either.
And we could see a vote on energy legislation very soon, Jonathan?
That's correct, yeah. An energy package passed out of a Senate committee last week. The Republicans in the Senate are going to caucus this morning. They're going to get behind closed doors, talk about it. And there's a big push to try and get a vote as soon as today.
May is a busy month, as I think our guests have demonstrated here. Thanks for all the perspective that both of you bring. Jonathan Osting of the Detroit News, Bill Ballinger, theballingerreport.com. Thanks very much.